Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
So hi, everyone. Today, here we are at the end of May, entering into early June, and we have Geneva Livingstone on our podcast today, and she is a grief and loss coach out of Toronto with quite the Facebook following and a lot of wisdom in what she has to talk about in terms of grief and loss and trauma and just human potential as well. So we're so glad to have Geneva on our podcast today. So I'm going to kick it over to you, Geneva, and you know, feel free to introduce yourself even further and we'll go from there.
Thank you so much, Erin. So my name is Geneva, Coach G Livingstone. I love the Coach G in the middle of it. I'll tell you why. When my kids were growing up, I never wanted to be called Mrs. Livingstone. So we shortened it down even at church. My mom and I are called like Miss G, Miss K. And then other people, as they've gotten bigger, they've called me like Mama G. And I'm like, okay. So when I started in the coaching space, I was like, we're going to call myself Coach G because that sounds fun. It sounds like a little cool, you know, it has to go with my image and all. So the Coach G part is in there. And then it sounds like a 3-punch knockout. Like Geneva Coach G Livingstone, like, woo. So I know, and it's so funny because my whole entire idea of getting involved with grief was because I was angry with death. Like literally, I thought I was going to step into the boxing ring with death, because in 22 months, my family lost 3 people. And they were 11 months apart. Like, we're not talking COVID. It was a year before COVID. My cousin, the firstborn cousin of all of us, 51, just before his birthday. My son, 11 months later. Then my other cousin, who is the oldest female of all of us, she passes away also at 51. So it was just like, I am done. Like, we just need to battle. Now, because I was in grief, I allow myself the grace because I'm in a different place today. But in that moment and that time, I was like, all right, people, it's time. I don't know how I'm going to fight death, but I'm just going to do it. So I was angry with how people spoke to us as grievers. So death etiquette was the first iteration of my business. I wanted people to not use all of those ridiculous poke people in the eye grief platitudes. God needed another angel. Everything happens for a reason. I'm like, okay, if everything happens for a reason, I just want to poke you in the eye and you explain to me right now in this hot minute why, what the reason is behind my son passing. You know, nobody can answer that question when you say it directly. I even had read a little blurb somewhere where somebody had said to a mom, well, you know, they're in a better place. And that mom replied to the other mother, well, why don't you let your child run into the middle of the highway? That way you can also say that your child is in a better place. It's like, are you kidding me with the things that people say? Like, Erin, did you have that experience? Were you not angry and mad at this? So I went on that whole rant. It was about that. I was furious. Also some of my customers, because I was a retail manager at the time too, and it's the first wave of COVID, so we're going back to work, and I had no clue about the amount of clients that also had experienced death. And one story was a mom who had lost her 11-month-old baby. She was in a different country. Her husband wasn't with her. He destroyed the home. Like, this is his son. They had another little one. They were so close in age, like almost 13, 14 months apart. But he destroyed the house because he couldn't be there with his wife to help her through this. On top of it, he's grieving as well. And everybody was like, really? Like, I don't understand why he was so upset. I'm like, don't poke people in the eye, just breathe. And then you get people who are like, so what happened? I'm like, is this for you or for me? Because people don't understand that when you say that simple statement, you are asking us to relive moment to moment to moment while we give you the description of what happened to our loss. They don't think about that. Why? Because they're curious. They don't think it's an issue, So, yeah, a lot of that stuff just came out of other people's stories about being trapped in conversation with other people who had zero clue how to have a conversation with us or not ignore us. Like, oh, you're grieving. Yeah, it's been 6 months. Aren't you over it yet? It's breathe, breathe. Hold your ears, hold your ears. Because they just want to poke people in the eye, right? They just don't get it.
Yeah, I sense this, use the words anger and fighting, and then the description of the man coming home and destroying. And I just want to honor that also in the female experience, there's that level often of wanting to destroy things and that anger as well that, may not be part of the traditional female role, but is still part of our grief experiences. And not everybody's, right? But in my own experience, yeah, that anger. I remember my neighbor, she was like, okay, we're just going to sit here and we're going to scream as loud as we can. And we just did that for like an hour in her home together. And, she had the insight to offer something kind of off the wall, but it was a way to kind of express anger in a way. So I appreciate what you're sharing in terms of the rawness and the difficulty navigating those hard conversations in the beginning. And I also want to highlight too the piece of sometimes though tripping over your words might be better than completely ignoring the griever as well, right? Like there's that other, there's kind of these two evils in difficulties. And so we do have ideas, and I'm sure we're going to share those forward throughout the podcast about what might be, more effective in terms of helping somebody in those navigate those big grief feelings and emotions. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. LaShawn, did you ha have something? I thought I saw you were close to unmuting.
I appreciate the story of fighting death. The imagery of that and the anger of that and the poking someone in the eye. And I'm thinking, that's very similar to like a very uncomfortable pain that cannot be ignored. And so I imagine, I mean, having dealt with loss myself, especially back-to-back losses, that is really a very visceral image of what grief feels like. It's that pain that cannot be ignored. And one thing that I was thinking about while I was listening to you with the frustration and the anger about the way people were talking to you and your family as you were grieving the losses was, just the question then, okay, so what should we say? What should people say when wanting to comfort or wanting to be there for, show up for people who are grieving? So that's a question I'm sure you would have answered eventually, but that's a question that comes up for me because I think that we do not have that knowledge or that skill. I don't think that's really part of American culture or Western culture. I do see it in other cultures that they do have a tendency to understand. They have a ceremony, they have words that they say, and they have a different relationship with death than I see as an American or as someone in North America. I spent some time in Japan, and it's a very different way of looking at death and loss. And so the question would be, what would be a good thing to say or do? Maybe it's not really what you say.
That's true. And I did this video on death etiquette the day after my son's birthday in the first year without him. I got to tell you, I was like, I'm going to do it the day of. And I couldn't. I was so sad. I was so upset. And I was like, Mom, why am I so upset? And she's like, this day is probably even harder for you than his actual passing because this is the day he was born. This is that first moment where you kissed her little face, you know, and we called him a tomato because when he was born, he was like all red. So he's like a little tomato. And I'm like, even thinking about it now, I'm like, the tears are coming. A lot of it is, how about you ask? You know, I know people like to say, I'm sorry for your loss, but when you're at the heat of it, like you're right in the middle of the fire, somebody saying sorry just makes me want to poke them in the eye because you want to respond because words mean things. All words have definitions. Sorry is you're apologizing for something you did. Now, it may sound like I'm nitpicking and I get it, but I'm just giving you the feeling of the fire. It's like, just say my deepest condolences. Please use the word. It's okay. We understand what that word means. It's not offensive, but I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Oh my gosh. You're so strong, you know, and of course those words sound like words of encouragement, but again, I'm in the fire. You're not giving me water. You're not dousing the fire. You're increasing the heat with those comments. So please don't, if you're not close to us and you're not in the inner circle, when you say, how are you? It's rude because how am I doing? We just lost somebody you love with your whole soul. How do you think I'm doing? But then if you answer like that, because in the heat of it, it sounds like you're snappy, right? That beautiful care of, you know, I heard what happened. I just want to offer you my condolences. I can say thank you to that and I can shut the conversation down. Please don't ask what happened. I already explained why. You throw us back and it's for you, it's not for me. I guess as a griever, especially in the first 6 months, we want to be cared for. You know, it may not be bringing dishes to the house all the time, but how about you just ask me what I need? Now, I have seen some people say, don't ask me what I need, just do whatever you want. So I think that depending on how close you are in the circle, I always say the circle is important because the inner circle is where you get to have the most powerful, intimate conversations. Those are the times when we can sit down on the couch and maybe just cry and not say anything. Then you have your friend circle who will be like, hey, I'll pick up the kids for you. I'll drop them off. Take an hour for yourself. I don't even care what you do. If you want to sit as a hot mess on the floor, but you're on your own, it's okay. Then you have your work friends, you know. And one of the things that we had put in place, because grief in my house was a little different, it was speak to one person only. Have one point of contact at work instead of 20 people calling, finding out what's going on, finding out about the process, right? And my mom's workplace was phenomenal with that. She had one contact person, let everybody go to that person. And from there, you get your information. You all get the same information. So being from Canada, I find that we are more private people. And I happen to work in an environment that is filled with a lot of Africans. And when people die, they all descend at your home. They crowd your space to me. And so it was like, oh, okay. My boss was telling everybody about my son passing. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like my laundry. What are you doing? Don't stop talking about it. So just even cross-culturally, things are so different. That was like a very interesting experience for me. Again, because I'm a little bit more self-aware, I was more kind about it, but I can see how you just feel like you're in people's faces. So prepare, like I always say, like a checklist instead of saying, what do you want? In case you tell me something I can't deliver, give me a choice. You know, would you like me to pick up the kids from school? Can I cook dinner for you and your family on Friday? Or do you want to just go for a coffee walk? We don't have to talk, but maybe you just want comfort. Ask the question. I think as grievers, sometimes people feel that we can't think and we can't function. And sometimes in some situations, that's a very true thing, but it's not true of all. So I think asking is probably the most powerful thing you can do with us. What are your thoughts?
I agree with the asking from both my personal loss experience and my professional. And I think doing that authentically is important. So how somebody asks is their authentic self too. And that matters versus them feeling like they have to change in a way as well. I feel like there's a little bit of a challenge in that. And I get it too, because we need the best care provided to the griever during those months and couple years. And you know what is good care, right? And so that's another question that comes up more generally. I will say for me personally, the question of like what happened actually was a little bit helpful for me in processing the loss, because I just had to get it out. It was so in there, and I felt like I would just blurt it out in these random moments. I'm like, what am I doing? But it just felt like it had to have a voice. And so that question wasn't as difficult with my particular loss, but I know what some of the grievers that I have worked with have not, you know, really found that question helpful. So it's very dependent on the person too, and that's what makes us so challenging, right? Because we know that when we're grieving, we show up as ourselves, but we're changing. We know our brains are effectively changing. There's neuroscience on this in American universities that prove this. So we don't even know what we want or need. And so it's just really a hard space to be in. But the way that you relayed care, Geneva Coach G Livingstone, I think that is key. That is the heart of it all. The coffee walks, right? Those types of things. How are people providing care? So that's kind of where I go with that. LaShawn, what about you?
The thing that resonated the most with me was the circles. Recognizing where you are in terms of relationship with the griever and what's appropriate. The other thing I liked about what you said, Coach G, was using condolences. You know, that is the appropriate word to use in that situation. I liked that too, just having terms, phrases that one can use. Because I would argue that it's not just the griever that is left feeling like they're in the fire, because people who are related to or they know grievers, or they've grieved themselves. I mean, loss is part of life. And they then will relive that loss as well. And there is that sense of powerlessness that comes with death and loss. And I want to also say that I think that compassion is in order too, not just for, and I'm not saying that the griever should feel like compassion, because like you said, you're in the fire, which I love that metaphor of the fire, because I think that really again shows like the feeling of being overwhelmed with pain and so much emotion, and there's so much going on. And all of us grieve differently, all of us respond to death differently. But I do like the list. I love the understanding where you are in relation. I love the one contact. That's fantastic. I think that would be great, not just in work, but also among families, because, you know, we have rings of relationships and families too. So there's, you know, the nuclear family, the people that are closest to the griever, and then you have relatives. If we just have one point person, so that we kind of shield the people who are in the fire from too much questions and not needing to manage or answer questions they don't want to. So those are the things that came up for me as you were talking, Coach D, and also Aaron. And knowing that I think it's important to know that this is something, death is something that really leaves us in a way feeling powerless, not knowing what to do or say, but wanting to do something, wanting to show up. And the authenticity too is a part that Aaron brought in, which I'm really interested in delving into, how one can be authentic in the face of grief. Sometimes even fumbling, saying, hey, you know, I really want to be there for you. I want to support you. And I love the coming to the griever with some suggestions. I'll take the kids or I'll make you dinner. I love that too, because then you have something that you're focused on. So you're not putting the burden on the person who's grieving, but you're able to offer something that the griever can then choose. And it kind of gives you that sense of, okay, I'm doing something. I'm showing up. I'm not just ignoring. I'm not making it worse, putting fuel on the fire, but I actually am doing something. And I think this is really important for our listeners. I think this is something we should be talking about with our children. We should be sharing that with them so that they know. Because I think my experience has been when there's been death when I was a child, it wasn't talked about. It wasn't something that we were able to process with our parents or other adults. And so what is your thought on that in terms of teaching children or talking about grief and loss with children?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because my granddaughter it was just before her fourth birthday when she lost, you know, her dad, my son. And then it would be maybe about 18 months later that she would also lose the next most important person, male figure in her life, which was her papa, her grandfather. And so I had like firsthand experience in navigating through grief with a little one and having these conversations, because sometimes she would just wake up so angry and so upset. I mean, in the beginning, her mom gave her little phrases like she would tell everybody that her dad died, but he's in her heart and he's in heaven. And I was like, okay, you know, because I take things a little bit differently in that. But I was like, okay, no problem. They were repeat catchphrases for her language. But then when the emotional winds started to come, it was, what do you do? She's waking up at night. It's like, okay, here is, like, my mom sent her her dad's hoodie so she could sleep in it, just that tactile thing that she could touch of him that still had his smell on it. But she had to cry. She still had to cry. Her little heart had to release whatever was in her little system. And a lot of you know, parents who have lost their children, if the grandparents are close, they're raising these little ones. So those conversations really need to be had. And for me, more so, I know what you're talking about from the outer ring of talking to children about death, but I'm giving it to you from the inner ring of grandparents coming to me and saying, what do I do? And little tiny things to help them move as you create what is called a treasure chest of ideas that the whole family gets together. If you're feeling like this, what do you want to call it? I'm having a blue moment. I want to go ride my bike, because it's on his little treasure list of things that he might want to do when he's having those anxious feelings. You do that list together, so it begins to help that emotional navigation process for kids who are in the middle of it. You get them to write letters, anything that is going to allow their emotions to come out instead of being held in, because we don't get eye level and talk to children about it. It's person's in heaven. It's going to be a good day. Let's go back to school tomorrow, right? When we cover it up like that, then later on we're dealing with behavior issues and nobody understands why. behavioral issues are coming up, even for, as you were saying, the circles within the family. You know, if a child loses their grandfather, they might not have lived in the house with their grandfather, but at some point, maybe this little person had this bond and they only saw grandpa at Christmas. But now that little one's never going to see grandpa at Christmas anymore. So those conversations of, you know, grandpa's not going to be here anymore, to me about it. Because I really think that they just need to unload instead of it's happened, shh, and all of a sudden they have to live muted. Because it's not just going to be about grief that they become muted with. It'll be about other things because this was so close to their heart. We as adults didn't address it, didn't care for them in those moments. Other things are going to come to their heart, but they're going to be like, yeah, it's not important to anybody else. And I wouldn't say that to an adult. I'm definitely not going to say that to a child. You know, everybody's house is different. So everybody has a different religious view. Whatever those religious views are in each home, it has to be addressed through that perspective and those lenses. But allowing their voice to be heard, allowing them to be seen at this time, and allowing their little emotions to be validated is the key, regardless of what filter, perspective, or religious lens that we're dealing with it through.
That was so well said. Like, I was just sitting there nodding my head yes to everything. And what you talked about is the type of care we should be providing kids all the time, right? And teaching them that those ways to navigate emotions. But the depth that, you know, of your expertise that you hold in relationship to grief with the treasure box and the example of the color of blue and go on a bike ride, like, these are lifelong skills that everybody should have access to. And I think that that's a challenge. It's better. I think it's getting better. We're learning more about how we don't, you know, just shut off our emotions and they're just as much a part of our being as our rational being. And I know that that's another thing LaShawn and I try to talk about sometimes on our podcast, like really combining the head and the heart and what that might look like. But yeah, if they're not learning this in grief, they're learning they can't be safe anywhere. And as an adult, that's what I experienced. I fell into such shame and in depression because that's how I learned to cope with not doing well or feeling hard emotions. And so, you know, that was really challenging in my grief and loss experience. And I write about it in my book too. And I write about this idea of like being witnessed in one's pain. We have to be a society where we can witness other people in their pain and not run from it. And I felt like that was not happening in my experience. And it's something I still challenge with too, in providing care to others as well. Cause it's hard work. It's scary. There's no good roadmap. It's tricky. Everybody's different. But it's necessary, very necessary. So I feel like I just went off on a lot of tangents there. And I was like, yes, but I was just so impassioned because everything in the way that you said it, I was like, yes, this needs to be put out to the world. What you just said about how we help kids.
Absolutely. No, I was saying that myself. Like the terms and the way that you talk about grief and grief education, you talked about death etiquette being one of them. And it's just so important to be able to have phrases and vocabulary and ways to explain what's going on with you emotionally. And I agree, getting eye level with a child and you know, helping them go through the process, guiding them through the process. In order to do that, one needs to be able to do that themselves, right? They need to have the skills as well. So my question is, where do people start? You know, your clients, people that you work with, where do you start with your clients? And do you only work with grievers or do you work with people who are interested in being companions of grievers? Can you tell us more about that?
For sure. My stance on grief is not just about the loss of a loved one, but it is about the loss of anything that you deem important or anything that is important to you. Because within the community of grief, there is this compare-itis thing that happens where, you know, I'll say, okay, I'm a compressed grief survivor. You know, I lost three people in 22 months. And then somebody responds back to me with, oh my gosh, yeah, I lost my grandfather. And then I lost my dog and I lost my job. And I'm like, okay, no problem. And right away, internally, that tells me that you haven't been seen enough, that you feel the need to compare my personal grief to yours. I just did a podcast with another amazing woman, and she had said to me, I don't know how you have done this. It's not something that I could do. And I feel like saying that to every mother who's lost a child. Now, she has a daughter who has a lot of unexpected health experiences that she's gone through, to the point where for years they weren't even testing her for the right thing because they didn't even know what she had. And the word is super long. I can't even repeat it. And the mom says, your thing, your word is longer than your height. And I said to her, you're grieving the health of your daughter. You're living in that anticipatory realm of when would this be over? Like, what's going to happen? Especially when the doctor's like, she's got 7 years. You're waiting. Like, okay, we're at 6.5 right now. Like, am I going to come home? Like, what is going to happen? And I said, that grief is not less than my grief at all. So that's really the perspective that I take. I also realize in working with so many different people that grief has a way of highlighting all the stuff in our lives that we like to hide underneath the carpet, but we trip on it. But, you know, we just keep hiding it, or we let the elephant sit on the couch and it's like got a squish. We only get like half a foot for our body and the elephant's taking the whole thing. Grief really primes your soul for eruption. And so I find that it's not just about the loss here. It's about everything that has happened underneath it. And then we can get to the loss. So I hope.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more too about how you shifted from grief education to the Lydia Project and other things that you're working on lately?
To be honest with you, the Lydia Project came up in the 10-month time. When I lost my son, I was already thinking about coaching, and I was like, women's empowerment, that's so wonderful. Women going through transition, that's so wonderful. But being in the thick of the grief, it was like, all right, people, if you don't have anybody, just come and talk to me. Like, that's just kind of how it started. But Lydia is my favorite Bible character. I love her. Because she was in fashion. She ran fashion houses. I love fashion. That's in fashion forever, 3 decades strong plus. And Lydia stands for loving yourself daily, intentionally, and affectionately. And I only released this in September because I didn't have the full body of what that really, really meant. And it's interesting because who opens a business when you're grieving? Me. You know, I'm like, I was such an active griever, and I thought something was wrong with me in this, because I see women on the floor, can't get out of bed. Like, I laid in bed, ladies. And I was like, why am I sitting here? I can't do this. Now, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm just saying my grief was very active. I needed to move. I had to function. I had to be busy, because that created the emotional movement that I required to process my grief. So coming through with trauma and the self-love and the grief all meeting in that place, the deeper essence of who we are as people is really about how we love ourselves. And based on how we love ourselves is how we will grieve. So when we say we all grieve differently, that's very, very true. And when we're peeling off the layers and we can see people who've never been seen or never been heard or never been validated, and they don't own a very strong emotional foundation, it's a deep, dark place to get into with them. but I am very happy to be there.
We need more people like you in meeting people in that space.
Yeah.
I think we have time for maybe one more question.
It's an honor it is. Oh my gosh, you say it so right. It is such a sacred place. And I think when people hear that their loss matters, like you imagine a woman who has lost her dog and you think, well, she just lost a pet. Like, I don't understand why you're upset. You need a day off. But that dog she's in relationship with, that means she has lost a relationship. She's lost, a part of her that she took care of, a part of her that depended upon somebody else for that joy coming home, because dogs love you to death. And you're going to walk in the house expecting to see your puppy and your puppy is not there. You're expecting to get that lick on your face in the morning. It's not there. How do you tell that person that what they're going through isn't important? Well, just buy another dog. Are you joking? To this woman, this dog has its own personality. You can't just replace it. Like, it's like telling a woman, I just had another baby. You know, you got more eggs? What's a miscarriage? I'm like, are you kidding me right now? You know, those are the things that make me want to poke people in the eye. Okay. I do not approve of violence, everybody.
I was going to say, where did that phrase come from? The poking in the eye.
It came from having these conversations when I'd be live on IG and I'm talking to people and they're telling stories and I'm answering questions for them. And it's just like, I'm so frustrated. I was like, oh, just poke that person in the eye. Why did they do that? Like, what gave them the right to think that they could do that to you? You know, like, I'm going to defend them, but, you know, so yeah, it's kind of become my thing. I'm like, put on glasses if you're coming my way. You did wrong to poke you, but don't tell people I say that.
The thing that comes up for me as you talk is, just the idea of witnessing and the idea of giving people, you know, the space and listening to them and giving them the chance to tell their story. That's just been like, seems to be a theme throughout in terms of companioning someone who's grieving or even yourself. I think that comes to self-love as well. Giving yourself permission to tell your story. Giving yourself permission to give voice to your story. Not everyone feels, you know, comfortable. Some people might feel like they're a burden, or some people might feel like what they're going through doesn't matter. And I think it's so important to remember that we all matter and our stories matter. And we just need someone like you, Coach G, to give them that to go into the fire with them. I really appreciate you for what you do and the sacred space that you hold for the people who are in the fire and in that place in their life where everything, as Erin has said in episodes, it's broken open and you're more vulnerable than you've ever been. And it's so important to, you know, to build, like you said, the treasure chest and to have these conversations so that when we are grieving ourselves or when we have a friend or someone we know who's grieving, that we can be a help and not hurt them more than they already are. So thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you. Ladies, this is just such an awesome conversation. I could talk about grief forever. There are so many layers of it, so many faces of it, so many different angles of it. You know, even when it comes to like men and grieving, that's not a topic that's talked about a lot and it needs a voice as well. Like there's just so many things, but I'm glad that you ladies are out here doing the work and I'm glad that you guys are giving voice to grief in such a big way, even though we think, oh, but you know, how many people are listening? Even if it's 10, that those 10 people become a ripple effect because they change that one little thing that they didn't know changes in them. So it gets to change another person's life. So I really, really appreciate you women. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So Erin, this is about the time of the podcast where we have a coaching nugget of wisdom. Any thoughts that you have, or should we turn it over to Coach G and see what she'd like to leave with our listeners?
I guess one thought that I have is just professionals talking with professionals is also important. So like learning through this conversation, you know, I've learned a lot that I can take back to my own role as well. And so it's you said, the many layers. It's not just us talking with the general public or grievers themselves, but also as professionals to professionals. So thank you for sharing your time and space with us. So that's my nugget slash kind of more of a summary. Geneva or Sean, I'll let you go forward. What do you add there? Because that was more of a summary.
It was just lovely. Summaries are so important, I think. Well, what I would say is, you know, the most important thing that I've taken from this wonderful conversation with Coach G is how important it is to just be there and listen and ask. That's the other thing. Don't be afraid to ask. You don't have all the answers. We don't have all the answers, but we can ask and offer, you know, things that we can do when someone is grieving, how we can, you know, help them and support them. So most I would say is just to show up for the people you love and, you know, authentically show up and ask.
I love that. My nugget would be to allow yourself to be, and it's hard, but in the darkness is where the transformation happens in the darkest of times in our lives. And just being able to sit in that darkness, whether it's on your own or whether it's with a support group, but allow yourself that time. Don't ignore that. Don't ignore that. Don't build a dam, because when the dam breaks, it's so hurtful to the people around you when that explosion comes. So if you handle every moment of darkness bit by bit by bit, you too will come out on the other side of your grief. It's not that it ends, it stays with us, but you change and you become. And that can only happen if you allow that work to be done in you. That's my nugget.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.